My name is Jason Rosario, and I invite you to join me in open and vulnerable conversations about what's on the heart and minds of men. This is Hey Jason. What's going on, everybody? Today, I have the honor to sit in front of the one and only Mr. Ken Miles.
Hey, and good morning.
You got to cue in the applause here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
No, man. Thanks for coming through.
It's a special day.
It is a special day because you are one of the first few guests on this brand new podcast. So welcome to Hey Jason.
Hey.
Indeed, right? I wanted to talk about a lot of things today, you know, but I wanted to ground our conversation on a topic that I think we're both very passionate about, and that is mental health, you know, and exploring that as a topic, but more importantly, how we as men, particularly men of color, are navigating that. You know, we live in interesting times socially and politically, and I think a lot of that trauma very difficult for us to deal with. And so that coupled with generational trauma as black men that we deal with in our communities.
That's me snapping to that one. Yeah.
Really just wanted to peel the onion back, for lack of a better term, and talk about, you know, how we're experiencing mental health, you know, the types of things that we can be doing or paying attention to, and then maybe ending off with some resources or actionable things, tools and resources that men can go to and fall back on as they navigate their own journeys. Does that make sense?
That definitely makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to be here to chat through some of that and work through some of that. And it's work that I think we need to do collectively. And it's work that we must recognize is still kind of in its earliest stages. Having a chance to speak with a lot of professionals and also a lot of friends and community members, it's the reality that we are kind of in the earliest stages of exploring, addressing, and putting words to mental health needs, and particularly in black communities.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned it. It seems like it's a relatively new concept, right? It's somewhat of a fad in the sense that we're paying a lot more attention to this, I want to say, in the last 2 years. And that's in large part due to some athletes coming out, you know, and really being transparent about their struggles with mental health and celebrities and things like that. But I think it's something that we've been wrestling with for forever, right? And so what, in your opinion, is the cause and what is the catalyst that's leading us to have more of these conversations in open spaces, right? Because they are taking place, but they're now just starting to take place a lot more openly.
I mean, I think it's a variety of reasons, but I definitely think that, in a way, greater transparency about being vulnerable is something that has picked up a lot of steam. You know, some may prescribe that to different social media platforms and kind of finding your tribe, if you will, outside of your immediate friend circle to align with in terms of shared feelings of you know, something's not right, or something's off, or something, you know, needs to be addressed that I'm trying to put words to. And I sense that in the last couple of years, we've really had this kind of renaissance around it being okay to not be okay.
Right.
And historically, you know, to your point of generational trauma, I know that in a lot of families, for a lot of people, particularly in black communities, it's always presented as something you work through, something you eventually evolve to a point of, you know, navigating on your own.
Or somehow you have to pray it away. You're not praying enough.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a lot to be said for the role of faith as a navigation tool. And for all the reasons that I do believe faith is a tremendous resource, I also look at the role of formal institutions, of formalized resources, even in a church community of mine uptown, First Corinthian Baptist Church. You know, it was within the past 3 years that they decided to pursue having a Hope Center, which was targeting mental health needs, particularly prioritizing low-income community members, right? So that needs to be designed for. That doesn't just happen. And that's a series of decisions that get elevated in part because there's a recognition that it's a valuable resource and that there's a community that needs that resource.
But why is it that when I look at the landscape and I look at men generally, men are doing the work and they're going out and they're seeking therapy and they're seeking help. But for some reason, men of color, black and brown men, Latino men, we're not doing that as readily as others. And so why is that? And I have my own theories around that, but curious to hear why you think we're not taking it as seriously or as seemingly as seriously.
You know, it's challenging to unpack that, and there's a lot there. And, you know, I am not a psychologist or a psychotherapist. Plenty of friends in my network fortunately are. But, you know, one of the conversations that you hear a lot about unpacking mental health needs in Black communities in particular is that by the time, you know, there's not a disproportionality to the number of folks that are seeking assistance in navigating their mental health journeys, if you will. But what often tends to be the differentiator is the point at which someone pursues kind of healing, someone pursues seeking out resources. Traditionally in Black communities, that there's a lag in terms of that time. Sometimes it's challenges with navigating, you know, the landscape. Sometimes it's pride. But a lot of times it's the point at which you say, okay, this is something that must be addressed, that sometimes it can be so far gone that there's a greater heightened need or severity, if you will, of symptoms that because it's not been approached or it's not been handled earlier in ways that it might be in other communities when it comes to men in particular.
It's not normalized.
Exactly. Exactly. As far as men specifically, you know, I think a lot and I've read up a lot on loneliness, and for all the reasons that men and women in Black communities can benefit through mental health resources, I think that there is a very pressing kind of urgency to men seeking out these resources, because when I just look around as we age, you know, I see greater trends of isolation in men more generally, right? So I see a lot of women in my networks that are being more vulnerable amongst each other. I see kind of this, I see trips together, I see shared experiences, right, where folks are more prone to kind of unpack their challenges or the stressors or what they're navigating. And I don't see that for dudes.
Yeah. No, it's great point. I just had this conversation maybe about an hour ago, in that, you know, as it relates to men, you know, where are our outlets? You know, when you think about a man and the many masks that we wear, particularly men of color, the many masks that we wear, you know, where are the spaces that allow us the safety to put those masks off? You know, and I like to use the analogy, when you look at a woman and she comes home 5 out of 5 days of the week and she's had a hard time at work and she's crying, the man is more often than not holding space for her in that regard, you know, comforting. But when a man comes home 3 out of those 5 days, on the third day, the most likely response is, you need to change something, or you need to man up, or you need to change your job. You know, and I think, unfortunately, there aren't that many spaces for us to take our masks off. And so that leads us to internalize a lot of different things. You know, so that's just one of my theories. The other theory is that when it comes to understanding and pinpointing how we're showing up in spaces, in different spaces as men, you know, because a lot of those outlets don't exist, and that internalization of anger and pain and trauma is happening, then it obviously leads to a lot of suffering, a lot of depression, anxiety. And then that then leads to an outlet of some sort, which tends to be anger and tends to be violence. You know, so that's how I kind of make sense of it in my mind. Would you agree or would you disagree with some of those ideas?
I mean, there are just so many levels. And I think I certainly agree with the ways in which we can internalize pain as Black folks. And, you know, this is in my mind analogous, but I've had a relative in my own family who's kind of been dealing with physical ailments, just aging relative and being proximate to that, some of the pains that she's experiencing. It's been a reminder of how much we can hold on to and how deep certain pains can be that, you know, when there are things that are outside of your control, just as you age, it's a reminder that there's a lot of repression that can happen as well, that we have to be cognizant of, because that correlates to shorter life outcomes. And, you know, I always say that as I get older, I probably pay most attention to my heart, quite literally and figuratively, because so many of the stressors, you know, it's the organs, and it's literally the things that are going on internally. It's your blood pressure, it's what you hold on to and how you allow for the space and the practices, the habits to kind of release some of the strains we have, particularly as you mentioned earlier and as you started this off with, being Black and living in America. You know, we have decades and decades of observation of what navigating those spaces is like, and the challenges and the spaces for relief. And I think that, you know, now we have technologies that more accurately perhaps can tell you what's going on internally. I know that Apple just released an update on their Apple Watch that includes for a heart monitor. And so what does that mean? I mean, I have questions about where that data goes, but what does that mean more broadly for ways we're able to be cognizant of what's happening to us internally and prioritize that as much as you prioritize your spin class?
Yeah. Let's talk about therapy for a minute. Yeah. And I know that, by the way, thanks for referring me to Dr. Jenkins.
Absolutely.
He's incredible.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and I don't know if I should be saying his name, but
might want to edit that out.
Yeah.
But all good.
No, but thanks for referring me. And you know, I've gone to therapy. I've been back and forth over the years, and I know that you obviously take that very seriously and it's part of your self-care routine. Tell us a little bit about what that's done for you, how you approach therapy, and because there's such a stigma attached to that. Right. So really just wanting to break some of those stereotypes down in the case that someone might be listening and saying, you know, I'm considering to go to therapy and I just don't know how or if it's for me or how to even approach it. So tell us about how you've approached it and what it's done for you.
Yeah. So, you know, the first time I navigated therapy was after a immediate family loss, losing my brother. And for me, it wasn't something I actually sought out. It was having the good grace and fortune.
I love that word, though, grace.
Grace, oh, honestly. It's actually my goddaughter's name.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful name. But in the context of what I was navigating, it was actually a psychotherapist in my own life who I knew through through a network of mine who walked up to me and she said, listen, you know, here's the number of someone. It's not a nice to have, it's a need to have. And you've been through something that very few people will ever experience in your lives. So reach out. And, you know, that experience was meh. You know, I don't know if I was young. I was not fully kind of committed to the idea of the work. Literally, I showed up and I sat down and I kind of went through the motions and had a couple of sessions and eventually kind of transitioned. And over the course of my own life, I've been through experiences with three different therapists, and kind of, you know, it's a vibe. It's understanding what you need. It's, you know, I think getting to a point where you can associate it with a gym membership, which is kind of ironic because I actually don't have a gym membership, but being in a position to know what feels right, what feels like you're benefiting from, but also being vulnerable enough to understand that this work is an opening up and it's not going to happen by any means overnight. But also realizing that when you find that alignment, when you find that synergy in that space of feeling improvement, feeling a sense of improvement, and in my case, I think growth, that you stick to that and you continue to check in on that, mm-hmm. and you continue to evolve that. And for me, it's also come through just being transparent, you know, navigating the loss of any family member, particularly a sibling, is tough, and it brought me to a lot of different spaces. Moved away from religion for a period of time and faith. But now I'm back and thinking about the other things I moved away from and towards as a result of finding a resource that worked for me, mm-hmm. was a blessing. But, you know, even in my last navigating my way to my current therapist, who you're familiar with, for me, that actually came through a previous relationship. Mm. And it was a mutual agreement just over the course of the relationship.
So who got the therapist? And, clearly you did.
And so it was definitely one of the irony being that she is a practicing therapist. Mm. So in that dynamic, it was kind of like, okay, I'll do that thing. Mm. And we put a timeline on that thing. And like 3 weeks before that timeline, you know, got the subtle follow-up. And I said, oh, okay. So literally went to resource Psychology Today, which a lot of people kind of underestimate as a resource.
Yeah.
But put in some keyword searches. Did it any mini, you know, pick between two.
Yeah.
And I ended up with someone that I've been engaged with and has been a resource to me ever since.
Yeah.
And that's been well over a year. And for me, I think that I'm grateful for a lot of the factors that led to me finding my way to my therapist. I'm also just grateful about the balance I've been able to strike at varying points of being engaged with a therapist. You know, sometimes it's more personal, or sometimes it's family, or sometimes it's, you know, other factors. But for me personally, I've got a good balance for the things that I navigate personally, but also the things that I navigate being Black in America, the framework of community as well.
Yeah, and I want to come back to that.
Navigate more broadly as communities.
Yeah, I mean, communities is huge. But I want to really quickly double back to a couple things that you just said as it relates to therapy. One, be committed to the work. Number two, be vulnerable. And then number three, it's, you didn't say this, but I think it just came to me as I heard you speak. It's still your work to do, right? You can't offshoot that. You can't what's the word?
Check the box.
Check the box, right? You can't, offload that to anyone else. And so those are three things that, for those that are listening and are considering therapy and are considering what it can do, what it can mean, don't, you know, just be mindful that this is your work to do first and foremost. And then be committed to it. And then give it what it deserves, right? That vulnerability that's required for you to open up and really have those conversations with your professional or with whoever it is that you seek therapy with. But coming back to community, you know, we have a mutual friend, John Jackson, who we have these conversations with often. And mm-hmm. we often talk about community and the fact that the healing that we're talking about, it has to occur in community. And that means we have to call on our tribe. Sometimes our tribe is on social media, sometimes they're in person. But it's important, and especially because our communities are already fragmented. There's such a deep divide between men and women in our communities already. How do we approach mental health from a healing from a community perspective?
So I think that's a great question. I think a lot of it has to do with how we approach stigma and how we approach the work of removing stigma and making it more widely thought of as air, and thinking about, you know, the air we breathe, the ways we navigate our pain points, the ways we navigate our stressors, the way we navigate our day-to-day. And, you know, there's a lot of unpacking. There's a lot of generational trauma. There's a lot of hurt that goes unaddressed. And our ability to work through that collectively is, you know, from our own lenses, to recognizing that there's no one way, because Black people are not monolithic, that we approach thinking about really any one thing. And so I've been really inspired by the ways in which folks in my community have gone on to address wellness through, you know, whether it's thinking about friends at spaces like Heal House and different modalities. Yeah, shout out to that team, because it's, you know, thinking about modalities through yoga, through breath meditation, through different forms of Reiki and healing, but also exercise. You know, I think that I've been impressed by groups like Harlem Run and that origin story and what Allison has been able to sculpt out of her own journey. And, you know, I think those are important gateways for conversations in a way that makes it more widely accessible and tangible for folks that, you know, they want to start a conversation simply by being in the presence of folks, but still navigating at their own pace, still navigating kind of that's the way you get through the door. And then when you're on the other side of that doorway, it's realizing what avenues you have access to then pursue the kind of healing that aligns with what feels right by you.
Yeah. So we're getting close to time, Ken. I just wanted to ask you if you can give our audience three pieces of advice that you would want them to walk away with, what would they be?
Three pieces of advice. I think that one of them would be, the most important thing I've learned in my life is the importance of putting one foot in front of the other. And what I connect that back to is action, intentionality. And I feel that for listeners, for folks that are thinking about what happens next steps, whatever they are, be intentional about the work of your process of finding healing. Because if you're not, then you may not find what you're seeking. I know through my kind of willingness and willing this into existence, this work and this discovery has brought me closer to folks that otherwise I wouldn't have an opportunity to connect with. you as well. So the intentionality of that is something that I think is valuable. Check out resources that are available to folks. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, is a resource. Also thinking about the Brothers Thrive initiative here in New York City. I've taken the mental health first aid.
Yeah, it's great.
It is. I've actually put it to use in my own community, and that's been a tremendous resource. So definitely check that resource out. And I think more broadly, the work is on all of us to reduce the stigma around navigating mental health and wellness. And there's an opportunity for each of us to play a part, to be an ear. I always say that if there were one thing that I would wish on the world, it would be for us all to be better listeners. And I think we can start with ourselves, really listening, not listening to respond, but just listening for those that need support around us, and instructing through our own self-awareness. And that's something that I've learned a great deal from, and definitely encourage folks in my network to kind of be the change around.
Ken, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do in your work?
So I'm a social impact strategist, and what that means is I focus on a lot of efforts to build and design tools for impact for communities, particularly communities that I care about, around issues that affect particularly Black and Brown folks. And I'm also on the community board, CB9, Uptown, so you can find me in Harlem, staying engaged and working to make a difference one block at a time.
One block at a time. And where can they find you on social?
You can find me on social on Instagram, KMilesAway, like 1,000 miles away, KMilesAway. That's probably, you know, where I post some things that resonate and reflect. I'm not super engaged on social, actually. On 2019, I'm thinking about ways to step away from it. But as I assess trends on the correlation between mental health and wellness and social media, which I think is an avenue I'm exploring, kind of that's the futurist.
There's got to be a case study.
That's the futurist hat in me.
Yeah.
We need to be mindful of our own best practices, and we also need to be mindful of the invisible designs of the products that we use.
Absolutely.
And unpack why they were created. And I think that critique is important. You know, that deconstruction is important in all of our lives.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, y'all. Ken Miles. Thanks again, Ken.
Thank you.
This is Jason Rosario, and you've been listening to Hey Jason, the podcast. Thanks for tuning in.